Well, hi there, Jonathan Doyle with you once again. Just a thought I'd share with you this quick interview I just did a few moments ago with the team from the internet radio station Cradio. I'll be speaking at the upcoming World Congress of Families on the impact of pornography, both on individuals and on marriages and people in general. It's a tough topic, but it's a topic that it's good for all of us to know a little bit more about in our work in Catholic education, both in terms of maybe supporting colleagues or friends or the young people that we work with every day. So hopefully you'll get something valuable from this short interview. I'm Jonathan Doyle, and I'll speak to you again just at the very end.
Thank you very much for joining me today, Jonathan.
Luke, fantastic to be here.
Thank you. Now, I wanted to talk today about pornography, which is a little bit of a taboo subject. Well, particularly in terms of complaints about pornography or its potential bad effects. However, we are seeing a number of criticisms of pornography on the front of the supply end of pornography, that is the actresses or the producers, but also the environmental effects. So how it affects men's view of women, how women in general in society are affected by it and the like. But what I want to talk to you about today is more the demand end, the consumer end, and that is the men and women, but particularly the men who are using it, who are husbands, fathers, or any member of a family. How does it really affect, that is, how does pornography affect men who are husbands within a marriage?
Luke, I think it's a massive issue. You know, I've had the privilege now of speaking live to over a quarter of a million people on this topic and related ones. And it's funny, you know, I keep thinking back to my high school careers advisor thinking, you know, of all the things I could have done, you know, and I end up somehow by the mysteries of grace talking about this topic that you articulated really well. It's taboo, it's toxic. I'll answer your question very directly in a second, but I think it's a culture that's deeply conflicted. You know, the sexual revolution sort of peaking in 1968 opened a huge sort of Pandora's box around, you know, how we understand and experience sexuality as a culture. And culturally, we don't know what to do with it because we sort of created a culture where we say, you know, everything goes, anything goes, the relativist mantras of as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. So for people to begin to say, look, this is causing harm, part of what the culture has to do is shut that discussion down really fast. And, you know, even stuff, if you look at masculinity studies, men can't even really come out and say, hey, this is destructive, this is damaging me, because men are supposed, if they're red-blooded males, you know, they're supposed to be happy to use it. To answer your question directly now, look, over the years, I could just rattle off so many stories of men, young men, older men that have come to, you know, see me at the end of seminars, and the devastation is absolutely extraordinary. As I was getting ready to talk to you, the one that sticks in my mind was speaking in Sydney a few years ago, and I spoke to a group of maybe 100 men, and a guy came to see me at the end, and you know, I'll tweak the details a bit. But you know, he was a solid Catholic guy who was really keen to, you know, he was a practicing Catholic, definitely loved his wife. He'd been married several years, had two young children, and had a chronic problem at the extreme end of pornography. And I'm not going to bother traumatizing your listeners with any details, but you know, he was a man who, basically, what it's doing to men, to husbands, is completely fragmenting them, because they make these vows, they want to be good men, and there is this completely secretive part of their life that grows rapidly. And one of the things about pornography is that I often say to audiences that the pornography you start with is never the pornography you finish with. It's all the research makes it very clear that it's incremental, that men will chase more and more extreme content over time. So any person of goodwill, any person, to be blunt, with a brain, can sort of realize that trying to hold together a relationship of intimacy, you know, and mutual self-giving and love, when at the same time you're exposed to extreme content, you're acting out of extreme content. So look, the devastation for the men is extraordinary. And I think, you know, I'll talk for hours until you interrupt, but basically to wrap up on this question, in all the years that I've done this work, when sort of wives and girlfriends discover that their husband or their boyfriend has an issue with pornography, I'm yet to meet a woman that goes, that's his problem. Like, women aren't able to kind of compartmentalize and go, this man that I love has a problem. They always blame themselves. So a woman basically goes, you know, she starts the software in her brain says, well, if I was more attractive or more sexually available, or if I did X, then he wouldn't have this problem. And women end up often wrestling with self-esteem issues, and the toll on the marriage is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I guess what we're really seeing with regards to marriages and couples, from just anecdotes that I've heard, is that we are seeing, a couple dynamic there, that we are seeing an increase in women who are using pornography, or husbands and wives or couples who are using pornography together. How is the use of pornography, even if it is together, or even if it is a so-called accelerant to the relationship, or something that increases the passion of a relationship, as some would say, how is that an offense against the intimacy, against the true nature of love within a marriage or within any intimate relationship?
Look, great question. The first things is, yeah, I'll definitely agree with you on, we're seeing an increase in the use by young women, which I always, women in general, I found it surprising when early in this work, I thought, and it still remains predominantly an issue for men, but we're definitely seeing more women using pornography, and that could be, for a start, the sheer volume of technology that we're using and accessing, so that the exposure and access points for women now begin earlier and earlier. And remember that pornography for many people functions as a kind of pain reliever. So when there's, you know, psychosexual, psycho-emotional trauma in life, then pornography acts as a kind of, at least partially, initially, as an alleviator of pain. Now, to go to your question on couples using it, let's do a couple of things. One is, firstly, I'd question that any woman in her right mind in a marriage says, hey, let's use pornography, it'll increase the joy of our sex life. I don't come across that much. I haven't seen it much in research. I hear, you know, there's plenty of stuff about men initiating it because male sex drive, you know, male
yeah,
sex...
Yeah, that's actually, sorry to interrupt, but that's usually... what I've seen as well, is that it is the man. It's not usually the woman who introduces it.
Yeah, and look, in terms of the research, you know, the first thing I say to listeners is, when we talk about pornography, we're always looking for peer-reviewed, high-quality international research. We're not looking for the latest survey from a national paper that was done online with 50 people clicking. Now, there was a survey a while back which was done by one of the guys. It was partially done, I think, with Catherine Lumby and the other guys from the Queensland University Institute of Technology. Now, the sample selected were pornography users, so there wasn't really a control group of non-users, but it was like, you know, asking couples who are using pornography heavily, do you think this, you know, improves your sex life? Well, you know, if we go back to those famous political trials in England, I think it was in the 70s, well, the answer is, you know, well, they would say that, wouldn't they? I mean, it's kind of a confirmation bias. If you're using pornography, you're going to start telling yourself stories about it. You know, let's be direct. Male and female sexuality is fundamentally different, and there's a kind of coalescence in that, yes, men value intimacy and the quality of the relationship too, but female sexuality is primarily linked to emotional intimacy, connection, and pornography doesn't, you know, fundamentally tend to meet those needs. And also what I talked about before with escalation is that the content used becomes increasingly extreme. And usually it's a way for males to carry out, you know, increasingly bizarre sexual fantasies on the women in their lives. And we do have one study by Christina Rogala, which was done in Northern Europe, which does show an increase now of wives and girlfriends finding boyfriends and husbands requesting increasingly bizarre sexual practices. So the theory is, you know, the more that men particularly are exposed to extreme content, the more they will act this out in relationships. And that follows the kind of basic four-step addiction model, which, you know, sort of event the stage four of the addiction model for pornography use is acting out, whether that's in language structures, sexual practices, or at the extreme end, sexual crime. So, you know, a lecturer once sort of talked about the sexual revolution and said, look, if the sexual revolution was going to make us happy, it would have done it by now. You know, we're seeing huge impacts in terms of, you know, sexual violence, relationship breakdown. You know, and then there's, at the end of the day, the only real counter argument is, you know, who are you to tell me what I can do, and sort of freedom of speech stuff. And I'm there saying, well, I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm just saying, here's the research. You know, one sitting right in front of me here, which I'll share at the Congress, American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. So this is the peak body for lawyers doing, you know, litigation work in marriage breakdowns. You know, there's one stat here, 56% of divorce cases involve one spouse having an excessive interest in internet pornography. Just under 70% of divorce cases involved a spouse meeting someone over the internet. And this is actually going back a few years. So, you know, human sexuality seems to be at its best in genuine, committed, long-term intimacy between two people, and we can be as postmodern as we like, but the research is starting to stack up.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the crux for this issue of pornography for me really is fathers, is the role of fatherhood. And we have had a number of generations, as you mentioned before, since the sexual revolution, we have had a number of generations of Playboy, of magazines, of pornography becoming increasingly extreme and increasingly normalized in people's lives. How has this affected the ability or the role of a father, and how is that then influencing his children?
Look, well, once fathers are compromised, then they lose any kind of relational, emotional authority to, you know, to work with their children on these issues and to mentor and guide their sons. No father's perfect, but, you know, if a father is deeply immersed in pornography, it's pretty hard to point out the pitfalls to his son and to walk him through those. Look, you know, it depends. I often say when I do parent seminars, even in sort of non-Christian spaces, we talk about, you know, the last words of the Old Testament. You know, I often say to audiences of parents, I go, of all the things that God could have said, you know, he could have done a wonderful summary at the end of the Old Testament, you know, just to give people one more chance to get it right. But of all the things he said, you know, Malachi chapter 4, where he says, you know, I'll turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers to stop me from destroying the land with a curse. And the breakdown of that is that kind of if fathers will not step up in their homes, love their wives as they promise to do, engage with her intimately, emotionally, and if they won't engage with their children, then, you know, someone else is going to do that work for them. And that someone else is a highly, you know, advanced media marketing and advertising machine, and because of technology now, a huge amount of pornography. So, you know, I do a huge amount of podcasting and talks to fathers, and it's pretty straightforward. We either get in the game or we don't, and we see our kids compromised and our kids in a lot of emotional and relational pain in the future. And as a father to young children, I'm not perfect, and, you know, Karen will be the first to verify that. But I do, you know, I get in the game, and I think men have to make a decision. You can have pornography, or you can step up and promise to do what you promised to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, you will be speaking on this issue and also on infidelity at the 7th World Congress of Families, which will be taking place from the 15th of May. I guess just to wrap up, did you want to just give a couple of last words on both pornography and infidelity, which you'll be speaking on there, and the connection between the two?
Yeah, a couple. Two words. That'd be hard for me, Luke. You know that. So, look, I've got two sessions that I'm doing. One is for kind of, I think it's kind of for people in, for business leaders and for medical professionals, health professionals, counselors. And I think what I'm going to do there is basically just upskill people. And you've alluded to it a couple of times. You know, we don't even need to have a moral discussion about pornography. We can have a sort of neurobiological discussion about it, because what we do know what we're starting to accumulate is a huge body of very high quality scientific evidence about how pornography, you know, neurally prunes the brain, how it creates connections between synapses, and we know that it's having a huge effect, you know, in this whole area of you know, psychopharmacology and what's happening at the brain level. So I want to take business leaders through that. I mean, if you're leading in business and you have a lot of staff, then, you know, productivity issues are going to be affected by pornography use at work. So I'll do some of that stuff and then give some health professionals just a look, an insight into what's happening at that physical level. And I think the next day I'm talking just to marriage educators and experts, we're going to look at, you know, pornography is the new infidelity. In the past, people would have to go and cultivate a relationship with a specific person and choose to be, you know, sneak around the place and break their marriage vows. But now they can kind of do it several times a day, often for hours at a time. So, you know, I just want to, we're going to take some people through that. They're short sessions. I'm just going to do a couple of short sessions and hopefully there'll be some good stuff there for everybody. And look, it's a great event. It's, you know, it's a privilege to see it happening here in Australia. And I, for one, shall be there to support it.
Well, I, for one, hope that I can be there to view it, because it sounds like you have a lot of great things to say on this. And it's definitely a good message for our time with the peril and the epidemic of pornography being so pervasive in our society. So thank you very much again, Jonathan, and I wish you the best of luck for the future, and I'll be praying for your message.
Fantastically. Appreciate it. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate. Well, there you go. Hopefully you got something useful out of that discussion there with Luke. Pretty big topic, that one, and I know it's one that's often hard for us to talk about and discuss, but I think maybe that's part of the reason that it's having such an impact, such a tragic impact in so many people's lives. So I hope you can keep following the work that we're doing here at Being Catholic. I'd love you to follow us on Twitter. Twitter's becoming bigger and bigger by the day, and it's a great place where we can just update you quickly about new content, new videos, and new things that we're doing. And you can find me at Being Catholic 1, Being Catholic number 1 on Twitter. And if you want to just reply to this email, I always reply to emails personally, so it'd be great to hear from you. You can find me on Facebook at fbjonathan.com. If you just type in fbjonathan.com, you'll find us there on Facebook. But I hope that's been useful to you, and I look forward to bringing you more great content very soon.